Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the reserved voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Indeed, reserved this week, Matthew. How are you?
Yes, not too shabby. Not too shabby at all. You?
Fantastic. Your voice sounds a bit deeper than normal today.
Does it?
Yeah, I don't know if that's maybe just tiredness or maybe...
I'm trying to channel my inner Richard Lee.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
You see, when you go a little bit deeper, the problem with that, and we can go deeper and deeper and deeper, is that our listeners, it puts them into a little bit of a trance. If they're driving right now, it's probably not a wise thing to do.
It's also not good for levels when you're doing a podcast, because that's sometimes what puts people off, if the levels are all over the place. So we need to keep it relatively
consistent.
That's it.
It's all about consistency, which for a goalkeeper is key.
He always brings it round, but I said reserved because you put out a little social media post this week, my friend. You found something. No, you didn't find something. It was sent to you.
Mr. David Rouse, the Stoke City goalkeeper coach, who we have got a fantastic pod coming up with Mr. David Rouse very, very soon. And of course, he's been here, there and everywhere. So do listen out for that. But he sent me a team sheet. So he was involved at Manchester United back in the day. And he must have been at this game, a reserve game between Manchester United and Blackburn Rovers. I did have my stint at Blackburn Rovers, which did include one bench appearance during the whole season. I went from playing 40 championship games the season before to one bench appearance the season after. But yeah, there was a reserve game that I did play against Manchester United. And it was interesting looking at the lineups because Manchester United had Gerard Pique playing. I had no idea that I played against Gerard Pique. The rumour is that Shakira was at the game and she took a liking to both me and Gerard, and she decided to go for Gerard, unfortunately.
But, and she's regretted it ever since.
Well, I mean, you know, she's forever trying to slide into my DMs, but don't you worry. I refuse them every single time. But there's a few other names of note. Luke Steele in goal for Manchester United. We've got Ben Amos was the sub-goalie. Quinton Ford. They do produce goalkeepers, don't they, Man United? My word. But there was a few names of note. Ryan Shawcross as well played for Manchester United on that day.
Gosh, you must remember a free kick or a corner coming in and Ryan Shawcross challenging.
Well, do you know what? I don't actually remember this game. That's the other part of this, which is a bit concerning. You'd think I'd remember that game, and I cannot for the life of me remember. I have no idea whether we won or lost. I remember playing them at home, but I don't remember playing them away.
So was that at Manchester
that
United?
That was at Manchester United, so it would have been a reserve fixture. I can probably tell you where. Let me have a quick
look. Where would it have been
playing? Bear with.
Some big names though. Quinton Fortune in there, Ryan Shawcross. It's quite funny, isn't it? Because Ben Amos is someone that we've featured on the podcast, and Luke Steele we're hoping to get on the podcast as well. Who would have thought way back when, Richard, you would be interviewing them on a podcast?
There you go. Life is funny, isn't it? There you go. Ewan Fields. It was Ewan Fields. No idea where that is.
Okay.
But there you go.
Sure you're not reading the name of the ref. Is that actually where it
yeah,
was?
May have made a mistake there. No, we do have the name of the ref though, if you are interested. Christopher Sargentson. So there you go. We are full of fascinating facts today, aren't we, Matthew?
There we go, we are. So you can't remember it, but not a nice little memento for you to have.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I can't. To be honest, I kind of blanked that year out to an extent. It wasn't a particularly fruitful year, let's say. It was a great year working with Brad Friedel and being up at Blackburn. But when I look back in my career and tell the stories that I do. I mean, I do tend to tell the same stories over and over on this podcast. I very rarely touch on that time because there wasn't really much of note that year.
No, but you met some important people like Brad Friedel, like Craig Bellamy.
True.
Robbie Savage.
Robbie Savage, yeah. Ryan Nelson, he was very good. He was a good player.
Morton.
Yeah. Morton Gamst, yeah, he was there. Any others you can...
He came up recently, didn't he? Because James Ward-Prowse scored that free kick yesterday, which we'll talk about. And I tell you what, we'll bring it back into goalkeeping.
We've got loads to discuss today again.
There's plenty. There is plenty to discuss. We're going to react to all the Premier League action, all the Championship and the small bit of League One and League Two action, and plenty of FA Cup stuff too. A quick word on Scott Carson. That podcast was due out on Friday for our patrons, and it was going to be out today on the free platforms. However, Manchester City, in all their wisdom, actually made an 11th hour interception, haven't they, Richard? And just put a little hold on it.
Yeah, just one or two small edits. We could have just said technical issues. That's the blanket thing you can normally say. Technical issues. We weren't able to get it out. But no, it will be coming out very, very soon. And I'm pleased to say that we've actually got loads in the bag. So although we've got some sort of teething problems, I would say, I'm going to use that term, teething problems, getting going again with the feature pods. We have got, alongside Scott Carson, we have got four more in the bag. We have got David Rouse, which was fantastic. Sam Johnson, who of course, certainly as of time of recording, a couple of fantastic games on the back of, and I had a really good chat with him yesterday. That will be coming out in the coming weeks. Carl Hakimi. Fantastic conversation. One of the most random conversations we've had, and I really enjoyed it because it allowed us to touch on spirituality and a lot of psychology with Carl Hakimi. And we've also had Anthony White, who's one of the England men's goalkeeper coaches, and a really interesting insight as to both his path, but again, how he's managed to get his A license at the age of 27, I think he was. He's only 28 now, and he's coaching obviously at the very, very highest level. So for a lot of you goalkeeper coaches out there, I'm sure you'll enjoy that one.
Yes, teething problems, although I wouldn't really call it that, just being told that we couldn't have certain things in the podcast from certain people. Hey, Richard.
Anyway, I'm going to move things on. I want to talk about our patron of the week, which we like to do. And this week it is Mr. Tom Canfield. Congratulations, Tom. You are our patron of the week. He's been a patron for quite some time as well. So a massive thank you to you. A massive thank you to all of our patrons. As always, it is appreciated. Thank you. Lots of great content due to come on Patreon. I always get this wrong. Due to appear on Patreon in the coming weeks. So I'm sure you'll enjoy that. Do let us know your thoughts.
You all right there? You get you okay? You got it?
Patrons, Patreon. This is your domain. I'm here to give opinions on goalkeepers. That's my job. I don't know why I then have that part of the show every week.
Now you start to dig that rabbit hole and I just let you worm your way into it.
And I say the same thing every time. But I'll tell you what I didn't say this week. I didn't say cap in hand.
Yes, thank you to those who have signed up to Patreon. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so at GK Union on Twitter. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. I should also mention as well, rate us and review us on iTunes. And if you can throw in as many goalkeeper puns as you can possibly think of, you might just be in for a prize too, Richard.
Absolutely. We are going to have some GKU merchandise at some point soon. Or is this just, I feel like we're kind of tempting the listeners with that. Is there any truth to this, Matthew?
There is, yes, coming soon. Okay. Some mugs, some t-shirts, some laptop stickers. Ooh. Even. So yes, all in the offing. Right, that's enough of this waffle.
Absolute
Richard,
waffle.
On to the Between the Sticks. Okay, Richard, last week you candidly talked about how this season was doing nothing for Dean Henderson. Fast forward a few days and he comes on to replace the injured David De Gea, half-time at Southampton, Manchester United, trailing by 2 goals. He keeps a clean sheet. They win 3-2.
Fantastic. 4 games so far for him this season. 3 clean sheets. A very good return. And look, what I'd say is there's nothing better, and I know you goalkeepers listening in, you'll agree with me on this. If you're going to come off the bench, would you rather come off the bench 2-0 up or 2-0 down? And I've got no doubt that every single goalkeeper that's listening in, it's a nice situation to come into when they're 2-0 down. Obviously, start the second half very, very well. And they're in the ascendancy. And in the end, I mean, let's be honest, he didn't have loads to do. It's never easy coming on, I'll say that. But if you are going to come on, it's a great situation to come on into. And he's the right type of character to do that. So, look, it looks great on the CV. You come on 2-0 down, you end up winning the game 3-2, another clean sheet. And you would think now that he is going to have that opportunity. Again, we don't know the extent of David De Gea's injury just yet, but you do get the impression this is going to be an opportunity for Dean Henderson. It's his to take now.
There was a tweet in just on the free kick from James Ward-Prowse from Moose and Me, who said, "What do we think about De Gea's positioning and that free kick? I think he's far too far over, particularly toward Prowse. I think positioning at free kicks and numbers in the wall is something that goalkeepers may need to revise in the modern game. Thoughts?"
I mean, look, it's tough because James Ward-Prowse, he is incredible when it comes to taking free kicks. And I stand by what I've always said, which is if it goes in your side, you hold your hands up, you take responsibility. And it's very rare that a ball goes in your side that I would differ from that. I'm quite steadfast on that. When it goes up, down, over the wall with pace and goes right in the corner, which this did, I know that James Ward-Prowse is doing it more and more. So you think, well, is there a way we can combat this? Truthfully, I don't think there is, because if you start to go early, he'll see that and he'll go the other side. So the only thing with this one, and it's very similar to the one that David De Gea conceded during the week, is that they don't necessarily look brilliant when you get that much of a hand on the free kick.
And clatter into the side netting
and
in the post.
So this is where, I don't know, he will have looked at both of these. Interestingly, the angle of his dive was slightly more square this time. And it was a case of if he does get a good hand on this he can keep it out. But unfortunately, the way in which he's deflected it, it's kind of deflected it into the post, and it all looks a bit of a mess in the end. Again, for me, no error. You can't ever say this is an error when it's gone up, down, over the wall with pace like this in the corner. Is there anything different he can do? I mean, look, I don't think there's many goalkeepers in the world that make this save. If there is a goalkeeper that's got a chance of making this save, ordinarily you'd say it's David De Gea with the speed, spring, athleticism that he's got. So I do think we've just got to credit James Ward-Prowse.
We must also credit Alex McCarthy with what I'm going to call a triple save because he made a poor pass out, giving the ball to Mason Greenwood, then made a save from Mason Greenwood, made a save from the follow-up from Bruno Fernandes, and then kind of arced his arm and managed to elbow the ball out of Bruno Fernandes's way in order for him to not get what would have been an open goal.
So my guess is after this, he will have had an odd sensation because it would have been more of a relief than being excited about having made the save, because the pass out obviously he didn't execute the pass out in the way he wanted to. And we've all had it. It's that horrible moment when you're backtracking towards goal and there's part of you that's praying that it doesn't end up in a goal, because you know that if it does, of course, that's being shown over and over and he's getting blamed from everybody in the media and so on and so forth. But credit to him, because he makes a good first save, but it is the second save where he's then gone full stretch. There's an element of luck, and I'm not taking anything away from McCarthy. This would apply to any goalkeeper, because what he's done, there's an element of luck, but there's a huge element of skill. The huge element of skill is being able to predict where the likelihood is of the ball going. And he's covered the goal the best way he could, full stretch, predicted where he thinks the ball's going to go, and on the back of that has made a superb save. And as you said, and it wasn't necessarily picked up, but there's just another action as well where he's just able to get the ball out of harm's way with the smallest of touches, and in the end that was the difference between it being a goal or not.
Well, it was a debut for Dean Henderson at St Mary's for Manchester United. Over at the Etihad, there was another Premier League debut, this time for Bailey Peacock-Farrell. Nick Pope was out of this game, actually, as a result of the save that he made, the brilliant save that he made against Crystal Palace, which I think we featured in the last podcast. He was out because of a knock to the head, I believe. So in came Bailey Peacock-Farrell. It's worth saying that in Nick Pope's past six appearances against Manchester City, he had conceded 22 goals. So maybe he might have been happy to have missed this one. In comes BPF, 5 minutes in. Burnley's defence are carved open, 1-0, which gradually turned to 5-0. Quite the baptism of fire for the lad.
Yeah, I mean, look, he had no chance on the goals. We could start to nitpick on certain goals, but no chance on the goals. The two talking points were the two goals disallowed. The first one, in terms of how it looks, is a tricky one when the ball's gone to the right of him and it's going towards the post and you're effectively looking to react off the post. Again, it doesn't look particularly good, and thankfully for him, the goal was disallowed. And the second one, he makes an unbelievable save, fantastic save, so brave, got to the feet of the striker. It was just a really odd moment. I've never seen anything like this before. And in the end, obviously, it was VAR that came to his rescue, where he's made the save, the ball seemingly is in his grasp, and a knee just comes out of nowhere. It's a very bizarre situation. And when you watch it again, you're kind of trying to figure out like what's happened here. But his knee comes out of nowhere and knees it away from him and knees it into the corner. And you can see straight away the look of despair on his face. And, you know, not a particularly pleasant moment for him. But thankfully, VAR did him a favour.
Over to the Hawthorns, where Sheffield United were defeated by West Brom, the Baggies' first win of the campaign. Perhaps a soft goal scored by Conor Gallagher. Now, Aaron Ramsdale came in for a bit of criticism for this one online over Twitter. I don't know personally whether he could have done anything with this. What do you think?
No.
Okay.
No, look, he can't. And, you know, I like to always seemingly bring a lot of these back to moments I've had in my career. And there was a very famous moment I had at Gresty Road. We lost 3-0 to Crewe that nobody will remember, but I conceded the exact same goal as this. Exactly the same, where you can't see the ball. The first time he sees the ball is about 6 yards out. So effectively, when I talk about like a moving ball, where the ball can move on you a few yards away from you, and it's almost like having a shot from 4 or 5 yards out, the same thing applies here. When you can't see the ball, and he's tried to find a way to see the ball, and he just can't, the first time he sees it is 6 yards out. So it's like having a very firm shot into the corner from 6 yards out. And that's the reason that it ends up going in the corner. He doesn't get particularly close to it. Unless the only way that he has a chance of saving this is somehow finding a way to see the ball when it's struck. But you often see goalkeepers then take up a false position. And the moment they do that, it might be that he moves a step to his right, for instance, in order to see the ball. He'd still get beaten because the ball goes in on your left. You're reliant on a little bit of luck. But yeah, I felt for him. There was just a huge number of bodies in front of him. And unfortunately, that was costly in the end.
I've got a bit of beef here.
Go on.
So it's starting to annoy me, all this stuff on Twitter, because Dean Henderson was not and never has been a Sheffield United goalkeeper. Dean Henderson has always been a Manchester United goalkeeper on loan. Wherever Dean Henderson has been on loan, he's been a Manchester United goalkeeper on loan. Stop making comparisons between Dean Henderson and Aaron Ramsdale. Now, with all due respect to Sheffield United fans, and if anybody is listening to this who is a Sheffield United fan, the level of goalkeeper that Dean Henderson is as a Manchester United goalkeeper means Sheffield United, in a sense, were quite lucky to have a Dean Henderson in goal for them for a couple of seasons. But he was never a Sheffield United goalkeeper. So to compare an Aaron Ramsdale, who is potentially a level below Dean Henderson, if we're looking at the calibre of clubs that they're at, to Dean Henderson is completely unfair. It's exactly the same thing I saw with AFC Wimbledon fans when I did an AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport last season, constantly, incidentally, in this scenario, comparing their goalkeepers, be it Nick Zanev, be it Joe Day, be it Nathan Trott, who was on loan as well, to Aaron Ramsdale, who'd been there the previous season. Aaron Ramsdale was a Premier League goalkeeper on loan at a League One club. You cannot compare the two, and it drives me mad every time Aaron Ramsdale makes any semblance of an error. Straight on Twitter, we miss Dean Henderson so much. He was never your goalkeeper.
Yeah, look, you make a great point, and I think that this is the way that I see it from a slightly different perspective. From a business perspective, you're always then, if you're bringing in a Dean Henderson, and this is where a lot of clubs do it, by the way, they've decided, certainly League One and League Two clubs, good example, they've decided to bring in a goalkeeper on loan because they know they can get a high caliber goalkeeper from often a top six Premier League club for peanuts. You know, and I've got a lot of this information. I won't say it on the podcast, but I know a lot of these goalkeepers are on loan that might be on 10, 15, 20,000 pounds a week that are going for no contribution. Now, I don't know the exact deal that Dean Henderson was on in going to Sheffield United, but my guess is certainly in year one, it would have been next to nothing. In year two, probably wouldn't have been a great deal either. Now, the reason that I understand they didn't go for Dean Henderson this time was that the contribution became that little bit too much. So from a business perspective, Sheffield United decide now we're going to bring in our own asset. We're going to bring in one of the youngest Premier League goalkeeper there is. And you know what? He could be worth 100 million in a couple of years' time. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but if he ends up having two or three very good seasons at Premier League level, and you've got a 24, 25-year-old that has 250 Premier League games or 200 Premier League games under his belt, potentially England goalkeeper, suddenly you've turned whatever he was, 18 million, let's say, you've turned an 18 million pound asset into one that is 60, 70, 80 million. And more important than that, you could potentially have the Sheffield United goalkeeper for the next 15 years. So was year one ever going to be his strongest year? No, they're still buying potential. Does he have the characteristics to go on and become that goalkeeper? Yes, absolutely, in my opinion. Has he been that bad this season? No. And this is the difficulty. They've scored four goals in 10 games. That's an absolute joke. It's a shambles. And yet he somehow becomes some form of scapegoat. Look at every one of the 16 goals they've conceded. Only 16, by the way, in 10 games. It's not like it's 35 goals. 16 goals in 10 games. I don't think he's been at fault for many, if any. So, look, it winds me up as well, but it just is what it is. I can give you 100 examples of where a goalkeeper who's loved leaves a club and it doesn't matter who the next goalkeeper is. They come in and they get stick because they're not seen or they're not the previous. It's as simple as that.
Okay, well, we're going to talk stats as well because we have to remain balanced. He has conceded 13 goals from outside the box in the Premier League since the start of last season. That's more than any other goalkeeper in the division. These stats churn themselves out. There we go. But he did make 5 saves in that game, as did Sam Johnston. Very good performance. Yeah. Another clean sheet for him.
Yeah, excellent. No, really, really good performance from Sam Johnston. Last two performances, in fairness, he's really stepped up. And this one in particular, because of the magnitude of this game. You know, you see how the Premier League is unfolding already and you get the impression, I know it's very early to say this, but the bottom three could be out of the bottom four as it currently stands. You know, you're looking at those four teams, you don't see tons of points in those four teams. So these are the games that are going to be absolutely huge. So these are big pressure games for all the players involved. And he seemingly, and obviously we've just coming off the back of the chat with Sam Johnston, and it doesn't surprise me after we spoke to him, he seemingly has the mentality to step into this type of game and produce this kind of performance. A very relaxed character, very laid back in a lot of what he says and does. But he produced a couple of excellent saves. The one in particular, the top hand save, again, didn't get the credit it deserved, but his positioning, movement, athleticism. He actually spoke to us on the podcast about a lot of work he does with an athletics coach to work on his raw power, explosive power. And you can see it here, the speed at which he got into position, the technique as well to use the top hand, which was the correct technique in this situation. Spring to get up there and fingertips over the bar. Perfect save.
Yeah, joint top with Cardallo now for most saves in the Premier League. Great agility. It was Ollie Burke with the header, wasn't it? Graeme Souness. We'll brush past it because we've got another commentary corner coming up. That's a half chance, he said. The goalkeeper, easy enough save. Let's go to Goodison because despite ending on the losing side, Jordan Pickford had a decent game against Leeds. Good save with his legs to deny Bamford. Excellent save coming back across himself from a Pinya header and later spread well to keep out Helder Costa with a cracking spread and then Bezzoli sprinted to the corner to get to the loose ball first.
Yeah, very good. Very good performance. And this is what Jordan Pickford is capable of. The interesting thing for me is that we talk about the life of a goalkeeper and how moments can change games. There was one moment, probably the one question mark in this game, was when he came for a cross, got halfway, realised he wasn't going to get there, and there was a header that then hits the post. And you could sense that he was a little bit relieved in this moment because this is how quickly the media can change their perspective. If that goes in, then he will have been blamed for this defeat, despite the saves. The fact that it didn't go in, we, as we are doing now, and as the media have done, will then highlight the fact that he did make good saves. And it just, this is where, again, we try and break things down in isolation. You know, the decision to come for the cross obviously wasn't the correct decision. And I'm sure that he will know that himself. But we can focus on the individual moments other than that. And as you mentioned, the amount of saves that he made in this game, excellent saves. He's a very brave goalkeeper. Like, and again, I say that and I know people will jump all over me because of the Van Dijk challenge or what have you. But the point is he does throw himself into challenges. That save he makes at the end, it's a great spread and it's very, very brave. And again, the speed at which he gets up to then go and retrieve the ball. That is Jordan Pickford. You know what you're getting to an extent in that he plays with high energy. Now, that doesn't work for every goalkeeper. And at times you could argue that it lets him down, but he does play with high energy. He is very powerful. And yeah, I thought this was an excellent performance.
Ilian Meslier as well. A couple of good saves in that one. Great save from Abdoulaye Doucouré.
Yeah, brilliant save. Yeah, do you know what? We talk a lot about explosive power on this show and speed. And so much, when you see this in Premier League goalkeepers, and we are talking about elite goalkeepers here, the speed at which he gets down, the athleticism that he shows, fantastic save. And the fact that he is as young as he is, and I think we do need to remember this because similarly when we're talking about an Aaron Ramsdale, talking about a Meslier, these are very, very young goalkeepers. To be playing at the level they're playing is so unusual. You know, we often talk about goalkeepers going into their prime in their 30s. The fact that these two gentlemen are playing in, what, 20, Meslier, 21, Aaron Ramsdale, I want to say, are playing week in, week out in the Premier League at that age. It's very exciting for both teams, you'd feel.
Commentary corner. Couple of commentary corners, Richard. First one is from Selhurst Park. We had this tweeted into us from Adam Travers, aka Rocket, he goes by on Twitter. Cardallo, he said it was cliche ahoy. Danny Gabardon, I think, was the pundit doing the co-commentary. An Eze shot. You'd expect him to save that, the form he's in. A Jeffrey Schlupp shot. It was probably going wide, but Darlow wasn't to know that. And a Benteke header. Not in the far corner, so you'd expect him to save that.
Brilliant.
There we go. Philip Hawkins has also messaged us in regarding this game. It was a 2-0 win for Newcastle in the end. Two goals from Callum Wilson and Joel Linton right at the death. Joel Linton's goal, just very quickly to touch on this. How dare he celebrate? How dare he do a knee slide in celebrating that goal? Horrendous goal for Vicente Guaita to concede, not because it was bad goalkeeping, just because it was a terrible shot and deflected off Gary Cahill. Yes, Joel Linton did well to get into the position and make space for himself, but jeepers creepers, you can't be celebrating goals like that. Anyway, we'll move on to the first goal from Callum Wilson. This was sent in to us by Philip Hawkins. Hi, gents. So glad you're properly back and in the swing of things. Finally sorted out my Patreon subscription to show my appreciation properly too. Thank you, Philip. I have a question for you. Watching the Newcastle game on Friday night, Callum Wilson admitted when he scored that he had been working on finishing through the keeper's legs as they had studied and identified the risk in Guaita's game in this area. Would this kind of analysis have come from the goalkeeping department at Newcastle United? And is this a common thing or is this purely from the analysis team? Secondly, recently. How would the goalkeeper team at Palace approach these comments? Guaita being called out for this weakness that ultimately conceded the goal. Will they adapt his training or look to reinforce other aspects of his game to compromise?
Yeah, fascinating. Really, really fascinating, the comments. Because I think that, again, who would have spotted this? There's a great chance it was the goalkeeping department at Newcastle, because of course they'll be looking at Guaita and they'll have an idea as to what he is as a goalkeeper. There is also a very good chance it could have just been the analysis team that have watched thousands and thousands of goals that they're conceding, maybe not thousands, but hundreds of goals that they've conceded over the last few years, and they may have seen a goal like this several times. Because what happens is, you consider this, and goalkeepers listening in, if you have a technique to spread, you will more than likely go to that technique every single time. It's not going to be one where you've got five different spread techniques and you just decide in the moment what one to do. If it's a one-on-one, you'll tend to do a very similar thing every time. That being the case, Guaita will have a similar technique that he produces and performs every single time. And if they think there's a gap between the legs, which often there is with goalkeepers, then that's an amazing thing to highlight. And actually, it's a match-winning thing to highlight here. Now, what do you do if you're Crystal Palace? Yeah, I think that's an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to maybe go back over your technique from games previous and consider, at point of impact, what is your shape? Are you the biggest that you can possibly be at point of impact? Have you made sure that the gap, certainly down by the legs, because the majority of shots on a one-on-one when you are bearing down on the goalkeeper, normally they are within a yard or two of the goalkeeper. So if you are going to perform the spread technique, you want to make sure that low down, you've covered as much as you can. Now, sometimes you get the very clever strikers that will lift it over you and what have you. And if it's a moment of brilliance, it is what it is. But I certainly think you want to try and make sure that the shape that you perfect at point of impact gives you the best chance of making a save if you are deciding to engage. Look, I'm saying this without having gone through hundreds of hours of Guaita's one-on-one technique, I must say. But the fact that they've said this would lead you to think that maybe at point of impact, there is the odd gap or two, maybe between the legs. But again, that's something that I've got no doubt the Palace team, the Palace goalkeeping department, a fantastic goalkeeping department they've got there, obviously headed up by Dean Kiley. I've got no doubt they'll have looked at these comments and probably be doing their own research now to decide whether they're valid or not.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you for sending that in, Philip Hawkins. There is another one, Richard, over at Stamford Bridge. It was goalless between Chelsea and Spurs, thanks largely to a fantastic, a brilliant, a phenomenal Hugo Lloris left-hand save from a Mason Mount effort from around 20, 25 yards, but not according to Mr. Gary Neville.
Right, before you say this, and I must, just for full transparency, I was watching this game, but I was watching the game on mute, which I tend to do quite regularly. And when I saw this save, I got up off my seat. I was buzzing. Fantastic save down to his left. A game-drawing save. And I actually did mean to go back afterwards and just see what kind of plaudits he was given for this save. Absolutely brilliant save. Anyway, I forgot to do so. It was only this morning on the way here to the studio that one of our patrons, Danny Sandbridge, got in touch and made a point of the fact that actually it didn't quite get the love that I thought it would have got. In fact, it was just the opposite. Matthew?
Just seems to take an age to get across, Lloris, but he does in the end. Gets a good hand to it. But he took an age to get there, mate. It took him ages, didn't it?
Took ages. Absolutely ages. A shot from 25 yards that's arrowing into the corner. In fact, it's not arrowing. And the reason it's not is it's moving a bit in the air. It's one of those classic strikes that he does that just seems to move a little bit. And it's going away from Lloris all the time. And the speed at which he gets down to his left and diverts it perfectly for a corner. This is a fantastic save. How is this not getting credit? Absolute nonsense.
I am always I'm conscious on the podcast of us going sometimes too far with this and the same thing that we're saying over and over again. But I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to say that I'm flabbergasted by this one.
My point here, and this is where we talk about agendas. Now, I don't know what it is, but Lloris gets very little credit from Gary Neville. Very little credit. Yet other goalkeepers seemingly are getting a lot more credit. And I don't know why that is. This is the bit that I don't know if something's happened there. Maybe he's got something against Hugo Lloris. Maybe something's happened that we just don't know and he dislikes him as a person, maybe. But for whatever reason, it just feels, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it just feels that there is something there because you cannot credit him. Why is that? What is it? Do you really dislike him as a goalkeeper that much that you cannot see when he performs a very good action? And this is the problem for me is that, look, we talk a lot about goalkeeping analysis on TV. I'm not going to go down the same lines there. But what I would say is that we need to appreciate that, of course, we're listening to these pundits, and the pundits will, of course, give us an idea as to how they see the goalkeeper, and that will in turn shape the perception of the masses. You know, if you name any goalkeeper in the Premier League right now, many will give an opinion which is based on the commentary that we're hearing, because very few people watch the game on mute. I'm probably one of the only people, I do it quite regularly now, watch it on mute, and I'm building my opinions as I'm watching it. But of course, the stuff that's going on Twitter, the stuff that's going on Instagram, will often be born from what we're hearing from these pundits. You know, I think Hugo Lloris is having a very, very good season, and yet he plays a game like that yesterday, faultless, came for a couple of brilliant crosses as well, looked so dominant in everything he did, and yet very, very little is mentioned. The only thing that's mentioned is that he's a little slow getting down for what I perceive to be a fantastic save.
And to finish in the Premier League, just a quick word on Bernd Leno, who was wearing, by the way, the Arsenal away kit in goal. That drew a lot of attention on social media. Love to see a goalkeeper in a slightly different kit than he would normally wear. It's because apparently all the other options clashed with the Wolves number. But Leno, you've made an observation on the second goal.
Yeah, just the fact that it wasn't once, twice, about three or four times that it was said that, oh, and Leno should probably do better. And again, I've watched it over and over. For those that haven't seen it, and I'm sure most of you have now, it was a shot from about the edge of the box and it was deflected. So he's already dived. It's deflected back in on him. So it ends up saving it around the sort of midriff. So there's no way you can get your hands to it. It just hits him because there's absolutely nothing you can do. And then what a finish. I mean, we were both saying, not that we like to talk about outfield stuff all that much, but it was a fantastic finish. And the fact that several commentators, several pundits all made a bit of a throwaway comment, oh, Leno should do better. No, nothing more he can do in that situation. It just, again, it bugged me the fact that they've said it without explaining why. Because genuinely, I'd love to know what he could have done better. There's no way you can get your hands there. It's going to hit you. It hits you and it goes where it goes. And in the end, you know, you've got to give full credit to the outfield player who did what he did. Fantastic finish.
Just before we move on to your eagerly anticipated Championship and EFL rundown, we have got one more tweet that I forgot to mention. This was sent in to us from @_cabbers, who has flagged a stat regarding Alisson. Of the last nine penalties Alisson has faced in the Premier League and Serie A combined, he has only conceded three goals. Three have been saved, three missed the target. @Cabbers says, good stat. Do you think players are missing the target by trying to be too precise, knowing how good he is, or am I talking rubbish? This is, of course, in reference to Neil Mopay's missed penalty in Brighton's draw with Liverpool at the weekend. It was actually, as a side note, Alisson's 100th appearance for Liverpool. He didn't keep a clean sheet in that game, but he has, incredible ratio, kept 46 clean sheets in those 100 games.
Yes, yeah, fantastic stat, that incredible stat. And no, he's not talking rubbish, I have to say. Fantastic question. And yeah, I think absolutely it plays a part. Again, we could talk for a long time about all the different things that happen when a penalty is being taken, but so much of it is psychological. You know, very rarely you would credit a goalkeeper when a player misses, but consider what's happened when a player has missed. They've obviously felt they need to put it so far in the corner in order to beat that goalkeeper. There is something to that. So the fact they've missed the target suggests to me that they know they have to be incredibly precise to beat someone like Alisson. So for me, I would always credit the goalkeeper even when it is a missed penalty. But I guess that isn't overly surprising given that I do look to give credit to goalkeepers wherever possible.
Richard Lee, it's over to you.
Indeed, it is the Championship rundown. We start on Friday night. Brentford getting a good win against QPR. Two excellent goalkeepers on show here in the shape of Senny Dieng and David Raya. Moving on to Saturday, Reading with a 3-1 victory over Bristol City. Special mention for Dan Bentley. Several brilliant saves, and I know that one of the things we are going to mention is a particular comment that was made about Daniel Bentley, who seemingly continues to excel game after game. Birmingham 0, Millwall 0. Neil Etheridge with an excellent save, top hand save, showing power, agility, everything that Neil Etheridge is. An important save as well to help save a point against Millwall. Blackburn winning 2-1, Kaminski making a real name for himself, an excellent save to his top right from a header. Had to move slightly to his left in order to see the ball, but managed to get back on himself. Great agility shown, tipped it wide, and a very important save as they went on to get the victory. Cardiff 4, Luton 0, a clean sheet for Alex Smithies in this one. Nice to bounce back after a very rare Alex Smithies error last week, so I'm sure he'll be pleased with that one. Derby 1, Wickham 1, a frustrating goal for Marshall at the end of this game. One of those goals where you've committed to the initial shot and you're in the air and you can't quite get back, and although it looks kind of soft, it's because you have committed to the initial ball. So I wouldn't necessarily place blame here, but certainly one that he would have been a little bit frustrated with. A great point for Wickham, that one, certainly. Huddersfield 3, Middlesbrough 2. Another start in goal here for Ryan Schofield. Norwich drawing 1-1 with Coventry. This was an interesting game in that we had two goalkeepers who aren't the number one goalkeepers at both clubs. Norwich giving Michael McGovern a start in this one. And for Coventry, Ben Wilson making his first full start, making several saves. In fact, I'm going to put a pin in that one, Matthew, because I want to talk about him a little bit more shortly. Rotherham 2, Bournemouth 2. A bit of a frustrating day, this one, for Jamal Blackman, giving away a penalty, almost keeping out the second goal that Bournemouth scored. Another positive day for Asmir Begovic. A couple of very good saves in this one. Sheffield Wednesday 0, Stoke 0. Of course, it was Joe Wildsmith who came back in for Sheffield Wednesday after the injury last week to Kieran Westwood. And for Stoke, the first clean sheet in his championship career for Joe Bursic in his third appearance. A very solid performance from him. And Watford beat Preston 4-1. A convincing victory for Watford. And on the Sunday, it was a clean sheet for Freddie Woodburn in a 1-0 win away at Nottingham Forest.
A few things to pick up on there that you mentioned. You said we had a tweet in. We do, from Neil at Lewis Royal, regarding that Reading-Bristol City game. It's funny because you said how good Dan Bentley was. He was. Conceded 3 goals, but was still very good. I think the co-commentator on Sky was Don Goodman, described Bentley as a one-man barrier because he kept Reading out for much of that game, sadly conceding 3 goals in the process. But Neil has tweeted us in, said, interested on your thoughts on the Bristol goal today versus Reading. Raphael on his heels or Wells just doing what he always does against us?
Yeah, a really interesting one. One that you could never place blame on the goalkeeper, but my guess is that as a goalkeeper, he will be a little bit frustrated by it. You know, it's one of those moments that you can see it's going to be a 50-50. You know you're going to get hurt. And ordinarily, you just throw yourself into it. And as long as you're solid enough with your hands and you're going with hard hands, I would say, and, you know, firm wrists, and try and block the ball as Naki Wells makes contact. And he just wasn't able to do it. And in the end, Naki Wells got his foot through it, had more power, and was able to force the ball in the net. So it's one that, again, you would never place blame on a goalkeeper here, but he would be a little bit frustrated knowing that he did meet the ball 50-50.
You mentioned Ben Wilson as well, who came in for Coventry. It was his first start in around a year, I think, in professional football. Funny case, Ben Wilson. He's 28 years old now. He's been around the houses. Before Coventry, he was at Bradford City. But I do like the cut of his jib, the way he spoke after the game, because he did make a string of saves in that first half and then conceded the penalty, bringing down Placetta, I think it was, for Norwich. Never a penalty. And he spoke after the game and said, I 100% got the ball. I've seen it back and I've even spoken to the referee, who wasn't quite sure. He said, it was going through my head that if I save this, I'm going to run straight to the referee and say, there you go, that's justice for you.
Yeah, no, I did. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I think that, yeah, look, by the way, he made several brilliant saves before this penalty. It bugged me a bit in that they're watching this on Sky Sports News on Soccer Saturday, whatever it was, and the commentary was effectively that it was a penalty. And I've seen it, and straight away you can see that it isn't. He's got a really good hand to this. The angle at which the ball goes, it's very obvious that it's not a penalty. He's got enough of the ball, so there shouldn't really be any question mark. But in the end, they decided that they thought it was a penalty. Certainly for me, never a penalty. Made several very good saves in this game. Credit to him as well, because they've given him the start ahead of Lee Camp, of course, who they signed on a short-term deal. So they've obviously shown a lot of faith in him to give him the start ahead of Lee Camp. And you've got to feel that on a performance like this, and with a performance like this, that he will keep his place.
He had a cuddle as well from Mark Robbins. Said he wanted to have a cuddle before the game to give him a bit of a G up.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go. Look, just give him a little bit of love. Give him some energy. You know, sometimes I feel like that. Like, sometimes we just do that. We just have a quick cuddle when we, like, need a little bit of a boost on the show.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Troy Deeney, by the way, in that game between Watford and Preston, see his penalty?
I did, yeah. He smashed it down the middle.
Did he?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Interesting. What are you trying to get at, Mr. Beadle?
Nothing at all. Nope. We'll move swiftly on from that one.
I kind of feel like we do need to make a point of this. So for our listeners who aren't so regular, let's just say that he's made that point hundreds of times. And actually, they even said it on Soccer Saturday itself. As he's lining up to take the penalty, well, this will be down the middle with power, which it was. Which, in fairness, the goalkeeper knew it was.
Well, it was Declan Rudd, wasn't it? Because he stayed in the centre.
Yeah, he did.
So is that Is that then poor goalkeeping? Should he have saved it?
No, absolutely not, because it's the power. Look, 12 yards, you know, if you're talking reaction times of a goalkeeper, when it's smashed, unless it's right at you. I mean, there was one that I made, and I like to bring this back to me at every opportunity. There was one that I made from Johnny Jackson in a penalty shootout at Charlton, and I knew he was going down the middle, so I've stood strong, and he absolutely smashed it, and it ended up going around my chest, and I was able to get my hands up just about and make the save. But I don't think people realise, when a striker hits it with that much power, to get your hands to it is so difficult. You're on your line. To try and get a good hand is so difficult. I was only able to make the save because it was effectively at me. If it's a yard above me, you do not make the save. So absolutely no fault of Declan Rudd. He knew exactly what Troy Deeney was going to do. But when it's got that much power, there's just nothing you can do.
Asmir Begovic as well, who we featured on last week's podcast. We're featuring again this week. Who knows? Perhaps Asmir can become a regular on Between the Sticks, as well as making a couple of very good saves in that game against Rotherham, like you mentioned. He's also started a new initiative recently that a number of goalkeepers have signed up to. This is the AB1GK Glove Bank, where if you send in your gloves to the AB1GK Glove Bank, they will refurbish and distribute these around the world to underprivileged goalkeepers. Here is Asmir telling us a bit about the project.
The Glove Bank is an initiative that I've started because I wanted to bring the goalkeeping community even more together, give access to gloves to all people around the world. I know there's perfectly used gloves everywhere that we can reuse and put to good use. So that's why I wanted to start the Glove Bank with, obviously, my brand, AB1GK. So, yeah, it's been going well so far. The reaction's been amazing. And, you know, if you want to look up any more information, head to theglovebank.com, and you will see where you can send those gloves and how you can get involved. And, yeah, looking forward to doing a lot of good with it. And thanks to everyone for their support.
Yep, top stuff, Asmir. Great initiative, that. As for the rest of the EFL, Richard, not too much going on.
No, there wasn't. Obviously, with the FA Cup taking centre stage once more, very few games in the EFL to speak about. So we are going to move straight into the FA Cup. And there were some excellent performances in the FA Cup. Do you know what? Normally, I do my rundown. I do my championship rundown and I just talk at 100 miles an hour for a couple of minutes. I kind of feel like I want to throw this back at you and allow you to touch on some of the key moments from the FA Cup this weekend.
Indulge me, Richard, if you will. Okay, the FA Cup, a top save from Bristol Rovers goalkeeper Ansi Yakole. Yet again, Bristol Rovers get into Between the Sticks. It was a great save to deny Tony McMahon. I'm going to mention it because they were 5-0 up at the time. And there's also that wonderful sound where it goes boot, palm, post. Ah, oh, lovely. Perhaps we'll bring that up at the end of the podcast. Ben Hinchcliffe, great spot kick save from Yeovil's Luke Wilkinson. Crucial. That was 2-2 between Stockport and Yeovil. Stockport went on to win the game 3-2. Joe Lumley made 5 decent saves to see Doncaster through in their tie with Carlisle. A good performance from on loan Stevenage stopper Jamie Cumming. He's on loan from Chelsea, of course, Tier 4 beating Tier 3 with 2 penalty saves and good tactics too. Taking a leaf out of your book, Rich, every time he saved a penalty, he rushed off to grab it, giving penalty takers their own preparation time. It's important, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You want to give yourself the best chance, give your players the best chance. And yeah, fantastic moment for him.
Absolutely. Good to see George Long back in that game as well. Got a finger to a Danny Newton shot onto the bar. The commentators didn't pick up on that. Great save. Matthias Sarkic on loan from Wolves at Shrewsbury. He made a couple of good saves to spare Salop's blushes against non-league Oxford City. Portsmouth 6, Kings Lynn 1. Might seem strange that we're going to flag the Kings Lynn goalkeeper, but Archie Mayer, on loan at the club from Norwich, he's only 19, couldn't do anything with the 6 conceded, but did make one worldy stop to deny Ronan Curtis at 2-0. A great strike, an even better fingertip save onto the crossbar.
Absolutely. Didn't have a Mayer, did he?
Oh, there we go. Lovely stuff. Richard O'Donnell, neither did he. He did his best to keep Bradford in their eventual defeat to Oldham. He denied Conal McElhaney on 3 occasions, but sadly to no avail. And the veteran Scott Flinders was impressive in Cheltenham's win over Crewe, beaten only by a deflection. He's fought back, of course, from 2 broken bones in his leg this year. Josh Griffiths, on loan from West Brom, of course, is the Robins' number one in League Two as things stand. Harrogate's James Belshaw, an incredible double save against Blackpool. The second one was almost made with his back as he scrambled across his 6-yard box They did, however, go down 4-0 in the end. And not often you see it, but a red card given, Richard, for an offence on a goalkeeper. Really? Brandon Thomas Asante going in high on Tom King of Newport. And last, but by no means least, Jack Bonham. He could have made a hero of himself with a volley right at the death. Gillingham's home defeat to Exeter. It fell to him perfectly, but he fired it high, wide, and Hansen.
It did take a deflection.
Did it really?
It did. I actually did speak to Jack about this because he did make a good connection, showed all the prowess of a top striker, but there was a shin pad, unfortunately, between him and the goal. Hit the shin pad over the bar, and he wasn't the goal-scoring hero. The goalkeeping goal-scoring hero that we hoped he would be.
Samantha Lacey has tweeted us, by the way. I do think it's worth mentioning this. She said it was so good to see kind, normal responses to goalkeeping when watching the FA Cup highlights and commentary. People with no bias or agenda, just expressing what they have witnessed, good or bad. It is so refreshing, she says.
Fantastic.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
We're going north of the border, Richard, for keeper capers. The often reliable Joe Lewis. This was the Betfred Cup between Aberdeen and St Mirren. He is the Aberdeen captain. He has since held his hands up. He's an experienced campaigner, 33 years old now, but he did let Jamie McGrath's 20-yard shot slip right through those fingers.
He did, and I felt for him. I mean, look, I'm not going to say this isn't an error, of course, but what I will do is just explain what I think happened, because it is a shot from distance. It has moved ever so slightly. Now, you know, you'll be working with your goalkeeper coach. There's a lot of your goalkeepers listening. You work with your goalkeeper coach, and one of the biggest decisions is whether it's a cup save or it's a W. And you've got that little bit in between when sometimes you'll like save a cup save, but you'll do it very, very high, and you're almost doing a cup next to your throat. Similarly, some people like to do the W that little bit lower, and sometimes you can be doing it around your midriff. Now, this to me felt like it was somewhere in between the two, which maybe he should have gone with the cup technique and got his body behind it. The fact that he's gone to catch it with the W and it's dipped a bit on him, he's then decided to try and palm it down into the ground. But of course, there's always a risk with this. And if you don't get the angle of the palm down right, then you're in trouble. And that's exactly what's happened. Looked like it was a wet night. So when you're then parrying the ball down, that's the other part, in that it will then zip off the surface. And unfortunately, didn't get his parry down right, didn't get the angle right. It's gone behind him. In that moment, it's gone behind him. He's got no chance. Tries to scramble back, tries to scoop it out the net, but it's too late. And it's that horrible, horrible moment. And as you say, he's ordinarily so reliable. So I'm sure this will be one that frustrates him.
No Rate My Save this week, Richard. We're going to leave that to Thursday because we're going to introduce another new feature. We feature a lot of saves on this podcast, but we never put it to you like Ray Clements used to be put to on Saves Galore. Give us your save of the year. Richard Lee, I want your save of the week.
And we have an absolute humdinger this week. Unfortunately, it didn't make a lot of difference because they still lost the game 3-0. But it was Harry Isted of Wealdstone, on loan from Luton, previously at Stoke and Southampton, I want to say. Correct me if I'm wrong. But it was a fantastic save. It was a fantastic double save. Now, how often do you speak about a double save? And normally one of the saves is okay and the second save might be fantastic, or the other way around. In this case, both saves for me were fantastic saves. The first one, top hand onto the bar. So he's going to his left, top hand onto the bar, gets up so quickly, and the ball is then delivered behind him. It's going in the goal, and he's dove back towards his line. And to have the speed of thought, he can't parry it round the post, to be able to tip it up over the bar, and you have to see it to understand just how good this is. He's almost scooped it up over the bar, and it just sits on top of the net. Must be such a satisfying feeling when it's just looped over the bar and sat on the net. One of the best saves I have seen for a long, long time. The fact that you've got two saves like this in such close succession, so unusual. And actually, we did feature him on Keeper Capers last week, so I'm delighted that he's gone from a keeper caper to being save of the week in such a quick period of time.
Yeah, bouncing back in true goalkeeper fashion, Harry Isted there. That was also sent in to us by Max Burrell and CJ Price. So thank you guys for that. And remember, if you'd like to get in touch with us, it is so, so easy. Really enjoying these submissions we're getting from our listeners on Twitter at GK Union. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.
McMahon, what a brilliant save by Iacola.